nick of time. What does that make us? Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now, what the young ladies in this grade need is an attitude makeover. And you're going to get it right now. I don't care how long it takes. I will keep you here all night.
We can't keep them past four.
I will keep you here until four.
That's very funny to me. Y'all ain't laughing, though.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, a film and TV radio show where a handful of film enthusiasts shoot the breeze about various movies and television shows. My name is Marcus E. Acco, and my first involvement in the film world or TV world was working at Odeon Cinema in Staines back in 2002. That's pretty much my first involvement in the industry. With me in the room
is Laura Sampson, and the first one I remember anyway, TV or film thing about me was a sadly unsuccessful audition at BBC TV Centre. When I was about 14, I was trying to be somebody who'd just found out that she was pregnant at 13, and I just couldn't find my motivation there.
You had no motivation for
Sadly
that?
Sadly not.
Oh, okay. Also in the studio with us, please introduce yourself and tell us your first interaction with the film or TV world.
Hi, my name is James Noble, and my first interaction with the film and TV world is I was an extra in a sort of a low-budget British movie, which was filmed about... almost 12 years ago, and that film was called Outlaw. It was the first crowdfunded movie.
That's Sean Bean, Danny Dyer, Lenny... what's his name? Bob Hoskins is in it.
Bob Hoskins, Lenny James.
Lenny well, James, that's
who's
it. That's
now,
it.
Who's now in The Walking Dead. Yeah, and this was the fourth film by Nick Love, who's... directorial debut, Goodbye Charlie Bright, was one of my favourite.
Okay.
It's still one of my favourite movies, and he followed that up with a very good adaptation of a John King book called The Football Factory, which was very popular.
That's with Danny Dyer again, right?
All of his first four movies had Danny Dyer in one of the leading roles.
Yeah.
And
For me, Danny Dyer's there are two films that I like Danny Dyer in. Football Factory is one that I can excuse him in, it's okay. The only one I really like is not 24 Hour Party People, the other one.
Human Traffic.
Human Traffic, that's the one. Yeah, I think he was excellent in that. But Outlaw, how was that? You were an extra in Outlaw?
Yeah, I was an extra in a film in the film Outlaw. So Nick Love's third film was called The Business, which came out in the autumn of 2005, I believe it was. And it was around that time that he decided to sort of source half of his budget by seeking donations from, because he had built up a fan base, so he kind of put it out there saying, if you want to... sort of help me get this film made, we can have tiers of rewards. I think
this is through Kickstarter or Indiegogo.
This was a long
like
time before Kickstarter.
Oh, really? Okay.
This was like late 2005. I'm not entirely sure that Kickstarter was even around then.
Oh, fair enough.
So yeah, this was something that he seemed to be doing off his own back. And I think just because I presume it was very hard to get the funding that he needed for a British movie, and he had got quite a cult fan base at that time. So he had three tiers of rewards. I believe it was £10, £20, and £50. And at £50, you got to be an extra in the movie. And for one of a few scenes. So I was one of the, because I was a very big fan of his first film, Goodbye Charlie Bright, absolutely one of my favourites.
Yeah.
And so I punted him £50 and I got to be an extra, which involved, sort of getting the first train down to Gloucester, which was quite frustrating because the film was set in London, but they filmed it in Gloucester.
So you had to pay for your own travel as well to get
there? Had to pay for the own travel,
okay.
Yeah. But I mean, this is 2005. I think I was 24 at the time and very big fan of these movies. So I was very excited.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so you're dressed up for a night out, at 6 o'clock in the morning, because you have to get down there, it's all day. You're in this fun pub in Gloucester, they've blacked out all of the windows.
Yeah.
And so the scene that I was in the background for was the characters. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Outlaw or if you know the premise.
Yeah, I've seen Outlaw, yeah.
So the loose premise is that you have this sort of collective of men in London who, for various reasons, decide to form a vigilante group.
Yeah, the vigilante group, yeah, exactly.
And the scene that I was in is the scene where they are figuring out how to be a vigilante group.
Sure.
And during the scene, Lenny James gets up from his table, the table that they're at, and goes to the bar, try to get drinks. He spills his drinks on some lads and they racially abuse him. He goes back to the table, says what's happened. Sean Bean's character, whose name I've forgotten, says, "I'm not having that." So he marches him through.
I remember that scene.
He marches him through the pub to, you know, sort of have a row.
Yep.
With these guys. And so I was in the background. You get there, like, you know, first thing, or not first thing in the morning, but you leave first thing in the morning. You get there very early. And you're positioned in the background. And so I was taking it very seriously because I was 24, very excited. And I work in publishing and I write in my free time. So I'm very into the sort of the concept of trying to be a part of this thing. So I develop in my head a reason for why I'm doing my
actions. You're trying to draw inspiration and motivation to be a guy in a pub. Yes.
I had thought it all through, and so I was miming that my wife was calling off the wedding and stuff like that. And so bless his heart, the guy in front of me who I was miming talking to had no idea what I was doing and was trying to kind of react and keep pace. And I think one of the assistant directors had to take me aside twice and say, "Don't whisper, like, because everything you say is going to get picked up on the boom mics, and so you don't whisper, you just have to mime." And to skip to the end, the long story short of it is that if you watch Outlaw and you watch it very, very closely, you will, if you can tear your eyes away from Sean Bean at the point where he goes to confront the guys who have racially abused Lenny James, you will see me in the background giving Sean Bean a dirty look and, you know, calling him some unpleasant names. Because what was cut out is that at the point at which Sean Bean was marching Lenny James through the pub, he was pushing people aside. And at one point he elbowed me to, you know, clear a path. And so that's what I'm reacting to, is that, you know, what was cut out was...
So you're being elbowed. So it looks like... in the actual movie, they don't show the bit where you're being elbowed.
No, they cut that out in the movie. Actually, you can see one take in one of the behind the scenes things on the DVD special features. You can see me get sent flying by Boromir, because he wasn't Ned Stark then, he was Boromir and Sharp.
Of course, yes.
And and that was another talking to one the assistant director gave me, was that, you know, you don't have to oversell it, he's going to push it, you don't have to. And I was kind of sheepish and said, "I'm not overselling it, like, he's Sean Bean, he's just sending me flying halfway across this pub."
Has this story ever appeared in any of your own creative work?
No.
It sounds like quite an important moment.
It's influenced every single book that he's written. There's always a character who gets elbowed in a pub in the stomach by Boromir. You just slip that in. It doesn't matter if it fits in with the story. It's just in there.
There's always a minor character called Sean or something Bean who meets a sticky end.
Oh, hey.
No, I'm totally lying about that. No.
Well, welcome, James. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. So what we're going to be listening to later on, we're going to talk about our top five UK box office. We're going to have our discussion, which we've posted out. We tried to make it a little bit more interesting this time. Any of you on Facebook and on Twitter would have seen how we've put that out. It's basically, we are rescuing five directors. We'll go into more detail later on. Rescuing five directors and one of their movies from the back catalog. We'll be talking about that later on. And we'll also be discussing Netflix or Amazon recommendations. But before we do any of that, let us have some film and TV news. So the first TV news that I want to bring up is about a brand new comedy that's coming to ITV2 called Time Wasters. Have any of you heard of it, Time Wasters?
I've definitely read the Guardian article about it. It sounds actually quite brilliant. Is it true that it was originally going to be called Black to the Future?
Yes, it was originally going to be called Black to the Future, but apparently I think Universal did not want to release Black to the Future. They did not sign off on Black to the Future. Basically, it's a 30-minute comedy written, created, and co-starring Daniel Lawrence Taylor. You may have seen him from shows such as Uncle or Cockroaches, and it's a show about four struggling South London four-piece South London jazz band who travel back in time by going into a urine-soaked lift in a dilapidated building in South London, and they end up in the Roaring Twenties. Two reasons why this caught my attention. One was because ITV2 were the ones behind this, and A few years ago, there was the whole buzz about lack of diversity on TV, and one channel in particular was ITV that kind of got hit with that because a lot of their shows had virtually just white actors and white characters being portrayed. But now ITV2 are coming out strong because this show basically has four of the lead characters being all black. You have Daniel Lawrence Taylor, who created the show. You have Kadeef Kirwan, who you might have seen from Chewing Gum. We talked about Chewing Gum last week. You have Adelayo Adedayo from Skins and Samson Kayo from the Javon Prince show. So four of them are all black actors. I'm sure they have other black, other ethnic minorities infused in the program itself. That was one thing that really drew my attention to it. The fact that it was it was ITV pretty much having this bold statement after being criticized for not having any diversity in their programming to just say, well, here we go, we're going to have a comedy program that just has majority of its characters as being black. But I was really looking forward to that.
Well, going
that
back
show.
To the Roaring Twenties, there's quite a lot of potential for comedy or awkward moments, awkward kind of race-related moments.
Yeah, again...
When they actually get there.
The creator, Daniel Lawrence Taylor, he pretty much came to fame in a show within the duo Ginger and Black, and they basically do edgy comedy. They're stand-up comedians, edgy comedy. They have music. He's a black comedian, and his partner she's white, but she's Ginger, and they're basically they're edgy comedians. Very funny duo. I don't know if they're still touring, but they're very funny. In fact, the show is going to be airing on the 9th of October. It's a Monday, 9th of October. We're going to have Daniel Lawrence Taylor actually come into the show on the 17th. So after two episodes, he's going to come in. You can ask him any questions that you want about the show. Watch two episodes and then just send all your questions to us on Twitter at STB_ResonanceFM or on our Facebook page, which is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4. So that's the first news story. James, you had another news story you wanted to bring up?
It caught my eye. Apparently this has been in the works since the beginning of the year, but they've just started production on a new Halloween movie, which will be released for Halloween next year.
Yeah, this is John Carpenter's Halloween, right?
That's right. Yeah.
I don't have the full number of Halloween films that come out, but it seems like there have been 20 or even 40 Halloween movies that come out. Go on.
I think including the Rob Zombie reboots, if you want to count them, yeah. I believe there have been 10.
10, okay. Because you had Jamie Lee Curtis, which is the main story, right? Jamie Lee Curtis is coming back for this new reboot.
That's right.
She released a photograph on Twitter and on all the social media where she was dressed as her character way back, 40 years ago?
It will be 40 years by the time the film comes out, yes. Yeah.
And here's a bit that caught my attention because from reading through stories, she gets killed in one of the films, doesn't she?
Spoiler alert! I believe she gets killed in the first 15 minutes of the eighth movie.
Technically, is it a spoiler alert if she's already announced that she's coming back for the new one?
But if you're looking forward to like binging all of the Halloween movies, then it might spoil your enjoyment of the first seven.
All right, now you've raised a good point about binge watching all of them, right? So. You're talking about rebooting because if they're rebooting it, when I read one of the articles, they said that basically they're going to be rebooting from the second episode going forward. That means everything that happened after the second episode is wiped.
The third movie could happen because that doesn't involve even Michael Myers, the third movie, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which I believe was directed by Tom Lee Wallace. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's who directed it.
Do you really want to keep that in there, though? Because Halloween is Mike Myers. If you don't have Mike Myers in the film, it's not a Halloween movie.
Well, I think the commercial and artistic failure of that third movie convinced him to bring Michael Myers back for the fourth. They seem to be doing what Bryan Singer tried to do with Superman Returns, which was to kind of pick up after the second movie in a series. I mean, the difference here is that they are going to be staying in real time. So Laurie, Jamie Lee Curtis's character, will be as old as Jamie Lee Curtis is.
Unless they do what they did in Ant-Man or in the latest...
Oh, digitally make her look
exactly,
younger.
Where digitally, exactly. So if they do... I don't know why they would do that because that just wouldn't make any sense, especially if they're setting in real time. But if they here's my point about binge watching the entire Halloween series. If they are going to then wipe all of that by rebooting it back to that phase, do you still encourage people to carry on watching all the other films that are going to be wiped out of the series, Or do you just basically say, no, don't, if you haven't watched it, don't watch it anymore. Just go back and watch one and two to recap and then come back to this new one.
I mean, I think it depends on how into the series you are. I mean, it's like, do you tell people to watch X-Men The Last Stand, given that, you know, they've done three movies to try and erase that from the continuity?
See, a lot of people have problems with The Last Stand. I liked The Last Stand.
No, I like The Last Stand, but I mean, it's, yeah, they have tried to kind of rewrite the continuity so that that doesn't take place, like, as if they've let Stephen Moffat kind of have a go at it.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going into X-Men, if they're going to rewrite anything, Origins, Wolverine, that should be rewritten. I have my own issues with that. We won't even talk about that now because... We won't talk about anything else. If we start talking about that, we won't talk about anything else. But okay, so in your opinion, from the ones that you've seen, the Halloween movies you've seen, do you recommend that people go and binge watch all the other installments in the franchise, including the Rob Zombie ones, or should they just basically go and do one, two, and wait for this one to come out next year?
I suppose it's going to depend on how good this one is, but I think my feelings on the Halloween series is, I mean, I'm someone who thinks that the second Halloween movie is unfairly maligned because, you know, it does something quite interesting, which I haven't seen done too many times before, which is Halloween 1 takes place over one night and Halloween 2 is still the same night. It picks up right where the first one left off and continues through that. And so it makes it a much more nightmarish scenario. Then what happened, obviously you have Tommy Lee Wallace's Season of the Witch, which did something completely different, and they brought Mike Myers back. And at that point, Mike Myers, they lost the ambiguity over how could this spectral figure keep surviving, and kind of made him a more of a supernatural monster in a different way. And he wasn't scary from the fourth one on, because... Yeah, he kept on coming back.
Speaking about not being scary, and that brings me to my last question on this topic, and then we can move on. Okay, so if they keep it in real time, so they have Jamie Lee Curtis's character being as old as she is now. Her character was, and this is not a spoiler alert, this is basically from the first movie, she is related to Mike Myers. She's his younger sister. Mm-hmm. She's almost 60.
I think she'll be... her character should be 58 by the time this film comes out. Yeah.
Okay, so 58. That means Mike Myers is in his 60s, maybe close to 70.
I mean, I believe in the prologue, Mike Myers is 11, so he's got to be at least a decade older than her. So, yeah, he's pushing 70.
He's pushing 70. So basically you're saying that the 70-year-old is wearing the mask and still killing people.
Well, that's the conceit. If they're doing this and it's real time, yes.
All right, fair enough.
It'll be interesting to see how they pull it off.
Yeah, well, we looked into it. We saw Danny McBride is going to be writing with David Gordon Green.
That's right, yeah. Yes. David Gordon Green is directing.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, if you've watched any stoner comedy within the last 10 years, you most likely have watched one combining these two. So we're talking Pineapple Express, Your Highness.
I believe so.
Yeah, those two in particular had both Danny McBride and were directed by David Gordon Green. So I don't think they're going to be bringing the stoner element to Halloween. I hope.
I doubt it, yeah.
I was going to say I hope not, but then...
Maybe the first group of kids Mike Myers kills off in the opening scene could be stoners.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's how you'd bring Danny McBride in there, right?
Yeah.
You'd have Danny McBride in there as a pot dealer, and then he gets killed off by Mike Myers.
Oh, imagine the opening scene. It's Danny McBride, James Franco, Seth Rogen, Michael Cera. They're just all randomly slaughtered by Mike Myers.
That would be a completely different movie.
But could you take it seriously after that? I'm not sure.
Not really, yeah. No.
The great thing about it, reading up on it, is that apparently they did get John Carpenter's blessing. Like I think David Gordon Green and Danny McBride had to pitch their take on the series to John Carpenter himself.
I hear he's executive producing it and coming up with the score for it. So I mean, the one thing that everyone carries away from the original movies is the Halloween theme.
Absolutely.
And Carpenter is either going to go back to the well and use the same one or a variation on that same tune. But at least we know that with Carpenter's skills in the soundtrack, he's going to come up with something that's very eerie. And that's one we talked about this yesterday when we were talking about It. One thing I really loved about the new movie It is how creepy it was. So I really hope that they do that with this one. If they're going to reboot it, not go for the typical horror trope of just loud noises and you know, jump cuts and jump scares, but to actually make it creepy, and that I will go back and watch for that.
Oh, I'm definitely going to watch it. Yeah.
Excellent. Laura, are you going to go watch that?
Yeah, why not? well, you know, I sound really non-committal because that's how I felt about certainly all the Halloween films and the It TV series. It really scared my sister, but I wasn't really that interested. So
you didn't like it or you didn't scare
you? So perhaps the new Well, I just wasn't.
We all float down here,
I just wasn't engaged enough to be. I mean, you really have to sort of be there for it to really affect you. And I just wasn't. I really quite liked clowns at the time, and somehow, I don't know how old I was,
he's so cute, so adorable. Every time he tried to, he was scary. Like,
well, he certainly didn't haunt my nightmares in the same way that he haunted my sister's nightmares, who's almost the same age as me.
Ah, fair enough.
I still haven't seen the new one. I've only heard brilliant things about it. I am looking forward to, all of the wrongs of my youth being corrected by this
now that you're an
brilliant
adult.
Film.
Yeah.
And then again next year.
Fair enough. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. You're here with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson. Sorry, I forgot my own name.
you just completely tuned out. You're like, yeah, that's it. No, and with us
clowns,
today,
clowns.
Yeah, you have like a monkey on a unicycle just running. She's going around in front of your desk. And with us in the studio, we've got
James Noble.
Excellent. So that was basically the news. We're going to keep it short on the news front today because what we want to do is we want to jump in from here, go into the top five on the UK box office. But before we do that, one thing I want to do is I want to give a shout out to a number of people that have reached out to us and. This was actually quite surprising that we have people listening in the UK. Absolutely. We have friends and family who are begrudgingly listening to us right now. But people happen to be listening to us from outside of the country as well. I would give a shout out to Gerard Scheitler, who's in Luxembourg right now, listening to us, as well as Evelina King in Sydney, Australia. Wow. Laura, you had someone else who was listening?
Well, I'd like to say hello to my sister Michelle and brother-in-law Tom in Namibia, and also Richard from Trinidad, who has been corresponding with me, sharing recommendations for films all week. Thank you very much, Richard. I have watched some of them and not some of them, and I'm going to get around to all the rest of them very soon.
Yeah, in fact, Richard gave us a list for our top five for this week, which when we get to it, we'll introduce them as well. All the others as well, please send in your top fives or just any movies that you want to talk about, you want us to talk about, any movies that not just movies, TV shows as well, Netflix recommendations, Amazon recommendations that you want us to talk about. Send them to us on Twitter at STB_ResonanceFM or on our Facebook page, which is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4. So we're going to talk about the UK box office top 10. Top five, because the last time we talked top 10, we almost ran out of
time. You took the whole show.
We did take the whole show. So we cut it down. We're just going to do top five. All right, so number five, The Emoji Movie. Thoughts? Last week, Emoji Movie was what, third? And it's just, this movie has been 7 weeks in the top 10. Why is this still in the charts?
We all need to go and see The Emoji Movie,
No, we do. No, why? Why?
I think we need to find some people before next week. We need to find them and ask them why.
Okay.
And then once we've collected enough reasons why, we'll read them out on air and then we'll go and see The Emoji Movie. I really feel like if this many thousand people love this movie, there must be something at least charming about it.
See,
but I still know nothing about it and have absolutely no interest in knowing anything about it either.
The only reason why I think it's still in top ten is, or in the top five, is because children are going to go see this movie. I'm looking for an adult who's seen this movie. James, do you know any adults who've seen Emoji Movie?
No, I don't. I don't even know any parents who have taken their kids.
I'm a parent. I'm not taking my kids to go and see this movie. There was one point about maybe 3-4 weeks ago, my 7-year-old turned around to me and suggested watching the Emoji Movie, and I shut that down. And that's what I feel a respectable parent should do. If there's anything I can say I would class as being good parenting, it would be to stop your kids from seeing the Emoji Movie. I'm being a little harsh and a little bit over the top, but I mean, come on, it's the Emoji Movie. I'll move on.
It probably shifts merchandise of some kind, I guess.
Yeah. Loads of what kind of merchandise? What kind of merchandise? Because you have emojis. Emojis come free on your phone, Facebook.
I'm sure there must be figurines and things that people put.
Plushy toys. So little plushy toys and like pens that are emojis. That's just brunch. Okay, fine. Emoji movie is number five. Number four is American Assassin. Have you heard about this movie?
No, this movie has snuck up on me like an assassin. Like, I had no idea.
This has Michael Keaton in it, Dylan O'Brien and Sanyul Thane in it. It's basically about a young adult whose girlfriend is killed in a terrorist attack, I believe, on a beach somewhere. And he basically channels that anger into becoming a CIA operative. And then he gets pushed into a separate program where he's being trained by Michael Keaton to become a Jason Bourne-like assassin for the U.S. government, hunting down terrorists. It's got great reviews in the States because of the leads like Michael Keaton. He's had this resurgence, came out of nowhere. I mean, this is here's another funny thing about Michael Keaton. Started off as a comedic actor, and he's one of those actors who's basically he's worked on his craft and he's twisted it. He can do both comedy and drama. And apparently he's excellent in this movie. I still haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming.
He's very good in that.
Yeah, so.
I mean, I don't know if it's how it plays to children who don't know him as, like the first cinema Batman, because to someone who can remember the first Batman movie coming out, there's a certain meta-textuality almost to the villain of this new reboot for a superhero franchise being an actor, being played by an actor who was once Batman or was once a hero. It gives his character an extra layer. Like, you can imagine a good man turned to bad. But I don't know if that plays to children who have never seen the first Tim Burton Batman.
That's true. I mean, Batman is a dark character anyway. And it was the whole controversy about him actually being Batman when he was known as a comedic actor to begin with. Because there's a spoof. I'm just trying to quickly find what the name of the spoof was, because I used to watch it over and over again. There was Multiplicity he did back in the early 90s, but that was after Batman.
Beetlejuice, Batman, I believe.
That was before Batman. So that's Johnny Dangerously. That's what it was. So it's just kind of a spoof on the old gangster movies. I loved that movie. This was before Batman. But then just to see that sort of his body of work, similar lane as Robin Williams and Jim Carrey, who basically can switch from comedic performances to dramatic performances. And apparently he carries this movie and, more power to him. That resurgence. He almost won. He didn't win the Oscar for Birdman, did he?
No, he lost to Eddie Redmayne. I think Eddie Redmayne won for the
Danish Girl.
The Theory of Everything. He got nominated for the Danish Girl the year after. He won for the Theory of Everything.
Oh my gosh, that was a pretty good year, wasn't it?
to be beaten by the Stephen Hawking Theory of Everything, right?
The Theory of Everything.
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne. I haven't seen that one yet. It's on my list of Eddie Redmayne movies to watch. I seem to go through all the ones where he's not that great. Jupiter Ascending, and I think it wasn't just him, but I watched it just because Eddie Redmayne, from what I've heard, and I've seen a couple of things that he's done, and he's excellent. He's an excellent actor, but it's lovely to go and watch some of those ones where basically you see him chew the scenery and you're like, dude, you're not earning a paycheck, you are just basically having a ball doing that. So that was number three, American Assassin. American Assassin. Number three, Mother. I say that because it has an exclamation mark right towards it. Yeah. So this is Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem, directed by Darren Aronofsky. Have any of you seen it?
This has been so frustrating because I keep trying to get people to see this movie with me. When they ask me what's it about, I say I don't know, and apparently I'm not supposed to know.
Okay.
Because they kept the advertising campaign very mysterious and the plot of it, the actual plot, they kept quite guarded. I'm sure there are details out there now, but I have been studiously avoiding them because it was apparently part of the point that you didn't know much about it going in, so you let the film's secrets unfold. And apparently that's not a way to convince people to go see a movie.
Okay, here's a question. And we will come back to Mother in a second. Why do you need someone else to go to the cinema with you to watch the movie?
No, I mean, on this occasion, I just kind of randomly was suggesting. I mean, I go to the cinema by myself quite regularly.
Okay, but that's good. The only reason I'm asking that is because I'm just wondering if it's a weird thing, because I like to go to the cinema and sit down by myself. And if anything, I prefer it, because that way I don't have to be social with whoever's sitting next to me.
I think on this occasion it might have been like the first two times I suggested to people, should we go see this weird movie that we know nothing about, and they flatly said no for that reason. I thought, how many times am I going to have to ask someone before someone says yes? And it just become a weird social experiment for me, I think. I probably will capitulate and go by myself.
I prefer going to a movie clean like that. In very few movies I've done that with. The very first movie I did that with was Life, Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence. Just on a whim, I just thought, you know what, I'm going to avoid every publicity, every trailer, every review, and just go, because I trusted Eddie Murphy at the point. I trusted Martin Lawrence at that point, and I figured I'm just going to step into the cinema and watch it. And it was a brilliant experience, because you have no idea where the movie's going, because you know in trailers these days you see a lot of the good moments, or you know, the climax points in a trailer. You can basically see the entire movie in a trailer. I mean, there's a Liam Neeson movie, Unknown, where I watched the trailer. I watched the movie afterwards just to see if I'd missed anything. But the trailer pretty much shows you everything that happens in that movie, from beginning right through the twist in the middle and then the end. And then I watched the movie and I was like, oh, that just basically filled in the gaps. So I liked that idea of just basically keeping yourself clean and then going to watch a movie like that. But anyway, that we just digressed. We're talking about Mother. I've heard rave reviews. Again, people are talking, saying nothing but good things about that movie.
But apparently it got an F cinema score, didn't it?
Did it?
Like, yeah, no. They do it in America. I don't think they do it over here. But they sort of survey people coming out, and they grade movies on A to F.
Sure.
And Mother! Is one of the few movies, you know, few major American movies that scored an F.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because, I mean, when you're
he
doing a survey...
He doesn't know, though, does he? Because he hasn't heard anything about it.
Well done. Someone was paying attention. I was basically thinking...
I've been thwarted in seeing this movie as well. I've sort of, on nights where I'm supposed to be meeting a friend, I've suggested going to see this movie, and they've gone, oh, well, let's go to the pub or go to the theatre.
And alcohol always trumps cinema, doesn't it?
Well, I did remind them that the two aren't mutually exclusive anymore. but sadly, I was unable to, on my free evenings, I was unable to convince these particular friends. So perhaps we can go together, James, now.
Okay. There you go.
Okay, we'll do that.
Excellent. So that was number three, Mother. Number two, Victoria and Abdul. This is Judi Dench, Ali Faisal. It's a Stephen Frears movie. It's about, correct me if I'm wrong, this is about Victoria, right?
Yes.
Okay. Laura, did you say you had seen this or you wanted to go see this?
I'm a huge sucker for costume dramas. I'm definitely going to have seen this movie, but I'm not sure whether I'll admit it on this show.
Why not? It's the caliber behind this movie is extraordinary. Stephen Frears, I love The Queen. I love the movie, the stuff that he's worked on. I would go and see this. It's just floated under my radar. I only found out about this because of the box office, because of my research for the box office top five. I saw it just sneak in, and I figured, oh, this is Judi Dench. Why has this not been advertised? But you know, you should go and see it. You should be proud to go and see it.
I've got a couple of friends who, when they're in London, we would all go and see a movie like this and giggle and popcorn our way through it, and then talk about the costumes afterwards. Sadly, neither of them are in London at the moment, but hopefully they'll come soon.
James is in London. James, you're going to go see Victoria and Abdul, aren't you?
Gosh, double bill.
Double bill with Mother. Yeah.
Why not? And number
which one first?
Well, yeah.
I think we'll need the costume drama after an Aronofsky film, I think.
You sure?
Yeah.
You might want to go first.
As a palate cleanser, I mean, the some of the trailers I have seen for Mother make me think of Requiem for a Dream. It makes me feel like it's going to be an ordeal.
Wasn't that Swan Lake film?
Black Swan, yeah.
It was also a costume drama.
Well, in
its way. Yeah.
But it was Aronofsky as well, yeah. Okay, fair enough. So you want to leave the cinema with, as you said, with your palate cleansed by having watched Victoria and Abdul.
It feels like that's the way to go, yeah.
You could sandwich it with number one this week, just basically have it in there somewhere. So basically you've got Mother, then Victoria and Abdul, and then just finish it off with It, which is our number one, which not ours, but is the UK box office number one. It's been in there for a number of
weeks. I think it's in its third week now. Is it seven weeks in the US, or did it come out the same day?
Right.
I think this will be its last, because word is that Kingsman Golden Circle will overtake it
absolutely by
this week.
Yes. I was hearing it. It actually smashed box office records. For this week in the US. So it most likely will do the same thing here. Have seen that. It's a good movie. It's definitely a good movie. I hadn't seen the part one. I hadn't seen Kingsman Secret Service. I hadn't seen that until the Friday before we went to go and watch the second one, and it was very good. I was very entertained watching both of them. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on 104.4 Resonance FM. You're listening to Marcus Acko,
Laura Sampson,
and in the studio with us,
James Noble.
So we've gone through top five UK box office movies. We've talked about two points in film news. One of the topics that we're going to be looking at next is going to be our top five. But before we do that, I'm going to do a setup for you, which is basically what I set as an assignment for everyone for this particular top five, which is our top five movie directors and their favorite movies. So picture the scene. Aliens have invaded Earth. We're talking well-armed, very effective, very efficient, merciless aliens. They've taken over Earth in the space of a week. They've destroyed all our army, and they have full control. And they pick you, and I'm talking to people in the room with me, to be the arbiter of anything that's movie-related. You have to pick five directors and one movie from their back catalog that needs to be preserved. Those five directors will continue to direct films going forward, but all their back catalog will be wiped away from existence except for one. And every other director, every other film director, will be repurposed to do other jobs, working in food factories, making Soylent Green, etc., etc. And all of their work would be erased from existence, except for the five directors that you have picked and one movie from their back catalogue. James, as our guest, can you please tell us your number five and your number four?
Let me just say, just before you start, this is the cruelest possible scenario I've ever heard. I don't know how came up with this extremely cruel scenario, but it's been plaguing my mind, as I'm sure you meant it to do.
Just because every time you come up with a five, you remember another person,
another five.
And then another five, and another five,
and another five of their movies.
Uh huh. and then when you pick someone, you then have to go through their own catalog and then figure, okay, you have to sacrifice everything else except for one.
Well, yeah.
Have you come up with your five?
We'll see.
All right, let's start with our guest, James. Who's your number five and your number four?
Okay, before I start the list, can I clarify that in this scenario, the aliens could reanimate dead directors?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. They can reanimate dead directors, they can bring them back, and they carry on from there. So if you want to bring someone back from the past, absolutely go for it.
I pretended they couldn't, because it was just too hard otherwise. You're a better man than me.
Well, if we are reanimating dead directors, then I have a personal and a tactical choice for number five, and that personal and tactical choice is Sergio Leone, the director of some great films, particularly the Spaghetti Westerns with Clint Eastwood that introduced the Man with No Name, also Once Upon a Time in the West. But the film of his that I would choose to preserve would be Once Upon a Time in America, is my absolute favourite film, and has been since I was maybe 16, and the first time I watched it over Easter, because Channel 4 used to put it on over two nights, Easter Sunday and Easter Monday.
Robert De Niro, James Woods,
yeah. Elizabeth McGovern, Joe Pesci, Burt Young. Yeah, it's a really fantastic film. But also, the reason why I choose that as a tactical choice is that Once Upon a Time in America runs close to 4 hours. And so if we're creating a world where there's only five movies for a while until these directors start making other ones, it feels like a good idea to have a particularly epic one in there to eat up some time.
That's fine. There were no restrictions on how long the movie needs to be. If it was a six-hour movie, that's fine. If you could put that in there.
But, well, if someone could ever get their hands on this mythical 4 hour plus cut that apparently was only ever shown at one film festival that I've never seen, and that it kills me, I've never seen it, and that'd be even better.
Good movie. That's your number five. What's your number four?
So then my number four, I was thinking it probably would be very good to choose a young director who maybe hasn't peaked just yet but probably has some really good films ahead of them. And so in that spirit, I would plump for a director called Ryan Coogler, who directed the really, really wonderful Rocky reboot, if you want to call it that, or semi-sequel, Creed.
Good shot.
I love that movie.
Yeah, from last year. And he's got Black Panther coming up in the early part of next year. But I thought, well, if we're starting from scratch cinematically, then you want someone who's, you've got a great future ahead of them, and based on Fruitvale Station, which is his wonderful debut as well, and Creed, I expect really big things from Ryan Coogler.
Absolutely.
So I would keep him around.
He bounced around on my list a number of times and just got nudged by a number of other people. But yeah, good, very good choices. Laura, what about yours?
Well,
number five and
they
number
keep
four.
On changing every 5 minutes they change.
So who's number five and who's number four right now?
Okay.
Remember, we're going to eradicate all other directors and every other piece of cinema except for them.
Well, I am going to take a leaf out of James's book and pick a dead director for reanimation. This is coming in sort of at the last minute, but I don't think I'd want to live in a world without Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai.
Okay.
Also a very long film, a film where lots of little conversations and little stories are going on in this bigger, quite epic story. Lots of lovely cinematography to keep the aliens happy while they watch it. I'm sure it would work, although it was a really hard decision. And you know how many films this filmmaker has made.
No, I know Akira Kurosawa. He was great. I left him off my list because I knew as a safety you were going to pick him. So that's good. Who's your number four?
Oh.
Come on, four.
Okay, Luc Besson. I haven't seen a film of his that I didn't like. The first film I ever saw of his was Leon, which I love. I think that was Natalie Portman's first sort of big.
It was a standout. It was her breakout role, yeah.
Movie, and it was just so horrible.
That was Natalie Portman, Jean Reno. Love Jean Reno.
And Gary Oldman.
And Gary Oldman, yes.
But I think I'd have to choose The Fifth Element because
I'm sorry, what? Fifth Element over Leon?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not my list.
it's just a film that's given me so much joy.
I watch it
sort of once a year, every year. It's got a kind of an action hero, and
Chris
Gary
Tucker.
Oldman and
Chris
and,
Tucker. Fair enough.
Well,
okay.
And an opera singer with tentacles and
look, I mock, but I love Fifth Element. Fifth Element is an excellent movie. It's just how do you? Okay,
I mean that's one of the really difficult things. I think Luc Besson's a director of huge range, though, I think, and I hope that he has got a fair few films left in him, especially if he gets Eternal Youth.
Fair enough. Okay. I said I wouldn't knock it. I have knocked it, but I will carry on knocking it. Don't believe me wherever I say anything. That was your number five and your number four. My number five, Taika Waititi. He is a New Zealand director. Those of you who have listened to or watched Flight of the Conchords would recognize his work. Flight of the Conchords is a TV series. And I love his sense of humor. His sense of humor is fantastic. And he introduced me to two of my favorite comedians, Jermaine Clement and Brett McKenzie, who are from Flight of the Conchords. But that's not what I'm saving it for. I'm saving him for Eagle versus Shark, which is it's a very offbeat, quirky movie. Set in New Zealand. It's about this these two characters, these two awkward misfits, if you will. One young gentleman who meets an awkward young lady. The young lady falls in love with him, and he manages to convince her to come back to his hometown while he goes and avenges some wrongs that have been done to him by a school bully. So he's learned karate, he's a master of karate now, and he's going back to his hometown to go and avenge or to go and cast revenge on this bully. It's an excellent movie. I recommend you go and watch Eagle versus Shark. My number four, I had other people. Ryan Coogler was on that list. Bumped him off. Number of other people bumped off. I'm not going to mention who they were, but I bumped them off for Steven Soderbergh, because how do you live in a world without Out of Sight? And I know Soderbergh has done. He has a huge catalog of awesome movies, but for me, I will watch Out of Sight and I'll just sit there and just. I just lounge in how cool and how amazing that movie is. And then the cast, look at the cast list. You've got George Clooney, Jennifer Lopez. That's Jennifer Lopez's best film performance. I mean, TV wise, she's in this new show called Shades of Blue and she's very good in it. But film wise, I can't think of any movie that she's been excellent in or she's been better in than Out of Sight. It's got Ving Rhames in it. It's got Don Cheadle in it. It's got Steve Zahn in it. It's got Albert Brooks. Just tons of excellent performance in that movie. Out of Sight, Steven Soderbergh is my number four. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. What we're talking about today is our top five directors that we would save from an alien invasion and one movie from their back catalogue. James, give us your number three and number two.
So my number three, and this is a late addition because it popped into my head when I saw it, I saw it on Sky Movies, I would choose Brokeback Mountain and the director Ang Lee. And the reason I chose it is because I was flicking around the Sky Movie stations very recently, and I saw, because you know they say it has X amount of time left on a movie, and I saw that Brokeback Mountain had maybe 15 minutes left, and I flicked it over and it was just the last two scenes. Now this is a film that I have seen several times before, mm-hmm. but you know, it's not a film that I would say I know off by heart the way I know some other films, but just watching those two scenes, I feel like I don't have to watch Brokeback Mountain again for about a year, because those two scenes make me feel like you've watched the whole film. There's just so much depth to the acting, there's so much depth to the writing, and those last two scenes are as moving as if you'd watch the 2 hours leading up to it. And so that, for me, is just so well crafted.
Okay.
And Ang Lee is such a craftsman.
I like your pick. I like your pick with Ang Lee. I like your pick with Brokeback Mountain. Just as a sidebar, quick question. What do you think of Ang Lee and Hulk?
See, I haven't rewatched that in a while. And see, because I have a degree in film studies, so like there's the sort of, for lack of a better term, the pretentious part of me that wants to give Ang Lee the benefit of the doubt in some of that. So I can't give you an honest opinion on Ang Lee's Hulk because I haven't watched it in a long time.
Fair enough. I'm probably the only person I know of that really loves that movie and defends it vehemently. I love that movie.
I could appreciate what he was trying to do. I just don't know if it worked. I don't know if I received it at the time. Like, I realized what he was trying to do when I thought about it afterwards. I'm not sure if I got it, but that might just be because I was expecting a superhero movie and didn't get it and was bamboozled.
Okay, so Ang Lee and Brokeback Mountain is number three. What's your number two?
And so then my number two is probably my favorite director, Wong Kar-wai.
Oh, nice. Nice choice.
And I knew I was going to choose Wong Kar-wai for this list, and I went back and forth on which one. I ultimately come down on the obvious choice, which is Chungking Express. And the reason I came down on that one is just that I love the background story to it. I don't know if you know the production history of Chungking Express.
So,
very quickly, Wong Kar-wai had spent about a year producing his adaptation of Ashes of Time. He was out in mainland China, out in the wilderness, putting this really sumptuous epic together. It was sapping him, and he returned to Hong Kong and just said, "I'm going to make a movie in 3 weeks." Hmm. And Chungking Express was the result. And it's one movie that I keep coming back to all the time. And every time I watch it, I sort of have a new feeling or see something in it that I had never seen before.
I love Wong Kar-wai, and that's one I haven't actually seen in particular. I will go back and I'll watch it just to make sure. Not make sure. Obviously, I take your word for it. It's a great film. But I'll put it on my list of things that I need to watch.
Yeah, you definitely should.
So thank you very much for that. Laura, you're number three and you're number two. You see, she's still crossing.
Oh,
she's crossing off list. She's crossing off her list. She's like, no.
I'm sorry. I was all set to cheat, and then I realised there was no way that was going to be possible. So I'm switching around 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3.
It's okay. You know, these people are not really going to, get killed and wiped off or whatever.
I like this to be an immersive experience.
Ah, fair enough.
Okay, so my number three is, I don't really know.
Come on, spit it out.
Okay. The Wachowskis.
Okay. Why did it take you that long to say them?
Because I really also wanted to choose Richard Linklater, Sofia Coppola, and Steve McQueen. like so sort of all in, all the, rolled into one.
Well, now that you've okay, you still have two slots on your list. They, you know, they could either fit in. But you, which else is you? Which movie are you going for?
Oh my gosh, I've just seen someone else who I want as well. Okay, I'm going to go for Cloud Atlas.
I would not have guessed that that's what you would have gone for. Well, me, no. Okay, no, I take it back. I would have guessed that that's what you've gone for because of the costume element. But I'm surprised that out of all their work, that's what, you know, eradicate everything else. You'd eradicate Matrix. Yeah, I'm sure you'd be happy to eradicate Matrix 2 and 3, but just Matrix.
I will defend Matrix 2.
You're going to defend Matrix 2?
I will do after the show.
Okay. I did weep a few tears when I said not Matrix, but Cloud Atlas. But Cloud Atlas is
you would
big.
Pick Cloud Atlas it's over just, Jupiter Ascending? I'm kidding. Go on, please continue.
This is hard enough for me already. Just don't make it any harder than it has to be.
Today you're number three, right?
Now I've said it out loud. I want to take it back.
Nope, you've put it down. That's your number three.
I thought it was a beautiful movie with so many brilliant performances in it. I have to admit, really, 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 really adored the book and wondered how anyone was going to make it into a film. They did it with like intelligence and heart, and there were all these love stories going on, which I just didn't. I had no idea how anyone's heart could be big enough to get them all onto a page, and they did. And every time I see it now, I don't see it that often because it's just quite harrowing, I feel, but it's beautiful.
Okay, so they're your number three. Who's your number two?
And it's about aliens. Quite a lot of my choices seem to be science fiction.
Yeah, that's. You know, I'm not going to knock you for that. You fill the science fiction quota, although I will come up with a science fiction one in a second. But carry on. Who's your number two?
My number two is...
She says as she crosses off someone from her list.
Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, awesome choice. Awesome choice.
There's
only one you can pick with his. Only one.
As with all of these directors, I was thinking about all the films I'd seen, you know, where had been the best monsters, where had been the best story, where had been the best action scene, and there's just so much. And the man himself, he's really sort of giving when he talks about his movies as well. He comes over here quite a lot and talks. And I had to flip a coin in the end.
You better have landed on the right one.
It's Pan's Labyrinth.
You're better. You're damn right. It's Pan's Labyrinth. Had you picked anything else, I would have dropped the mic and I would have walked out of this room right now.
Well, you know, Blade almost killed Pan.
Blade 2. Okay, yeah, be specific. Blade 2. But yeah, okay, fair enough. I'll let you off.
That Pan's was quite Labyrinth. A magnificent movie too. Pan's Labyrinth was.
Had you said Hellboy, I'm gonna let it slide a little bit. But no, Pan's Labyrinth, absolutely.
Oh,
yes.
Actually.
No. Excellent. So my number two, Ama Asante. Belle. And I'm surprised you haven't mentioned this one, Laura, because Belle...
I haven't seen it, you know.
You haven't seen Belle. No. You would love Belle. Costume drama to the hilt.
I saw the actress from it on the tube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was quite a...
Yeah,
nice
so did you walk up
me.
And be like, hi, I haven't seen your movie yet, but I know you're in a movie.
No, I did that London thing, which was sort of pretend to be reading a book, but with one eye wandering over to the opposite side.
Belle is a true story of Dido Elizabeth Belle, who was, I'm just reading here, it says the illegitimate mixed-race daughter of a Royal Navy admiral in 18th century England. The movie is exquisite. It's very well done. It's very nuanced in its performance as well. You have fine actors just basically working at their best just to present this particular this drama. I'm not particularly fond of costume dramas or period pieces, but this movie in particular just got me. I will happily sit down and watch this movie again. Just because it's sumptuous on every level, the performances, the script, the sense of feel that you get just sitting there, listening to these characters and just watching these characters, it's magnificent. My number two, I know we're running quickly out of time. My number two, Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon, he I could listen to his characters just speak constantly. Just I long to live in the worlds he has created with his characters. And the film I'd pick for him is Serenity. That is my number one, my number two favorite movie of all time. I've watched that film easily 20 to 25 times.
Wow.
Awesome movie, Serenity.
We haven't talked about TV, have we? Well, perhaps no, we because can do we're this for TV.
We'll do this for TV. We might do this for TV, but we're doing films at the moment. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. We're talking about five directors that we would save from an alien invasion and one movie of theirs from their back catalogue. James, give us your number one.
Yes, so very quickly, my number one would be Scorsese. There would have to be a Scorsese in there, and this, sure. This was a very hard decision, but I ultimately came down on Taxi Driver, because as I said before, there are a few films I know word for word. Taxi Driver is probably one of them, but every single time I watch it, it just keeps me on my toes.
See, Scorsese I agree with you, because you could literally throw a dart and pick any of them and say, yep, that's fine, we're happy, we're keeping those ones. Yeah, absolutely. But Taxi Driver is a very good one. Laura, what's your number one?
My number one is Masaki Yuasa's Mind Game. I was reminded, I haven't seen it that many times, but it's the most visually exciting film I've ever seen. And it's about to be screened again at the London East Asian Film Festival as part of their celebration of Japanese animation of the last 100 years. It's one of three films they've chosen. And I feel like everyone in the world should see it and know what... just how it's done and how it could be done in the future as well.
Okay, I'm interested in seeing that one. You need to write that down for me as well. What's the name of the movie again?
Mind Game.
Mind Game. Mind Game. Okay, I'm making a note because I heard you mention that a while ago, and I wanted to get you to remind me what it is. Mind Game. I'm writing that down. My number one. Anyone who knows me knows I love this movie. And these directors, because similar to Joss Whedon, I can listen to their dialogue for hours, and they are the Coen brothers. And the movie that I'd pick of theirs is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I love that movie to bits. That movie I've seen at least 250 times. I know that film word for word. You could basically start a bit of the sentence and I will finish it off for you. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Is what I would recommend.
there are certain films one just sort of gets stuck in that kind of thing with. Mine is, sadly for me, Neverending Story, which is less braggable about, perhaps.
No, you can brag about that. Just not with me, but you can brag about that one. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on 104, on Resonance 104.4 FM. We're doing well for time. I know we got one more minute left, so that will basically be for us to do our recommendations. So, James, would you like to give us a Netflix or Amazon recommendation?
Yes, my Netflix recommendation would be a film called Warrior, which is about 5 years old, but it's Tom Hardy, Nick Nolte, Joel Edgerton, MMA, Rocky movie. It's absolutely wonderful.
I love that movie. It's a great movie. Laura, what's your recommendation?
I actually don't have Netflix, but my Amazon recommendation this week is a movie, and it's The Handmaiden, Japanese-Korean remake of Sarah Waters' Fingersmith. Is that right? Yeah.
Okay, excellent. For me, my recommendation on Netflix is The Expanse. It's sci-fi. It's kind of like Firefly and Serenity. It is an amazing show. Go and watch it. Well, we're all out of time. You've been listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Marcus E. Acko.
My name's Laura Sampson.
And with us today was...
James Noble.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.